You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today I need to ratchet down the tone at the beginning. No more happy pitch voice. The Pacers draft lottery is concluded. And as every Indiana sports fan would have guessed, the Pacers fell from fifth best odds to the sixth pick in the lottery. We'll break down what happened, what it means, what the Pacers could do, Kevin Pritchard's comments about said lottery, and his history with the number six pick. A little interesting tidbit he mentioned to us in his presser. Joining me to do that, you may have heard him as a producer on 107.5 The Fan, and as an NBA Summer League broadcaster, gets to hang out in Vegas with all the cool rookie pros, including potentially who the Pacers draft at number six, where they end up picking Jimmy Cook. Jimmy, were you at all surprised as an Indiana resident to see this happen to the Pacers?
Not even slightly, Tony, and thank you so much for having me on Locked On Pacers. I know what some people might be thinking if they're watching this in a YouTube medium. Why is this guy wearing a soccer jersey? And oh, wait, that's a Ted Lasso jersey. What's going on here? Well, if you watch the show at all of Ted Lasso, there's a line they talk about in English football about it's the hope that kills you. And that is basically what it was tonight for Indiana Pacers fans, hoping that the ping pong balls might give you a jump into the top four for the Pacers tonight. No, I wasn't surprised at all. In fact, I thought they would end up dropping further, because that's how things tend to go around here. Only end up dropping one spot based on their projected areas. So not too surprised, but I was a little bit hopeful, Tony. I won't lie.
Everybody is. The lottery is really good at, you know, especially with the new flatter odds, is really good at reeling people in to their broadcast. And look, people know that, I think most people know I have a job outside of sports media, but I don't think most people know that my major in college was actually math. So a thing like the lottery, which is just a bunch of percentages and odds smacked in front of my face, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm in. So in my head, the whole time going to this, I'm like, okay, like they're probably going to be six or seven. So I wasn't surprised because of how my brain is wired to be. But it's also like, you know, for a franchise that has been good or tries to be good for 30 plus years, hasn't been in the top 10 for so long, even their picks at 10 have been infrequent. Like, you know, the jokes about them being due are kind of true, right? It's really rare for a franchise to kind of have that path. So obviously not a good thing for the Pacers to end up at six. And I thought this was pretty interesting. You know, we were talking to Pritchard after the lottery happened, and, you know, they didn't fall too far. Like, they only fell one spot. He's not like devastated. You know, they're like, okay, six is fine. And we'll talk about the kind of tiers of this draft in a moment. But, you know, I asked him, like, how did you feel watching it on TV? And he joked that, you know, they had a toast this morning with all the Pacers scouts, and, you know, he could tell that some of them were nervous. And I think that is more telling than what actually happened, is that they know how important it is to move up versus down. Like, falling to six is obviously not good. And that's why when this is your livelihood and your job, you get nervous the day that the event happened. So for a Pacers team that obviously would have loved to have a home run prospect, not awesome to end up at six.
No, and I mean, I know we're going to get into this later, but once they finally ended up at six, and based on what's going to be available there, if an offer comes, Tony, I'm almost tempted to trade back. Like, if somebody wants to try to move up with you, depending on the assets that are there, I know we're suddenly stepping into a 2K simulation season when we're doing that. I get it, but that's the whole fun of the offseason in case you're new to this whole thing. So I don't know. I mean, you could tell that they knew, like every other Pacers fan, that what the ping pong balls hold your future, basically, right? Everything's out of your hand. You can have your draft boards, you can have your early stuff before we get into the NBA combine and all that good stuff. But ultimately, it all comes down to where the dice rolls for you. And the good news is now you know where you're picking, but any dreams of Jaden Ivey ending up here, even though there's a mock on ESPN that has him to the Pistons at five, so maybe I shouldn't say that, but I think he goes before then. Any hope of Ivey coming to Indy, I think, is on life support at this point if you're in that camp.
Yeah, see, here's where I will, you know, give Kevin Pritchard a lot of credit. Well, let me stop and say what is said by teams and what is done by teams are often different. So we can only take his word for what it is right now, and it's just words. But Kevin Pritchard says after this draft, we are going to be aggressive. And then when asked for clarification by, I think it was Greg Doyle, said that doesn't necessarily mean aggressive up, you know, it could go, like you said, maybe there is a back trade a little bit where you scoop up another asset and get a guy, because this draft is interesting in that clear top four and then like a large swath of starter level guys. Maybe if you love Shaedon Sharpe, a top five, whatever. So if you're six, you know, hey, you can get a guy you kind of love and move back a few spots to get something else. Maybe that makes sense for the Pacers. But also aggressive could be, hey, we have 31 and the Cavs pick next year and a bunch of really good vets. You know, if you're a team like the Kings who maybe wants to be good next year after you traded with the Pacers for Sabonis already and you're at four, maybe they want another one of the Pacers vets or something like that. You know, there are paths in both directions for trades, which I think that's part of how the lottery shook out that could benefit the Pacers. But I thought Kevin Pritchard's comment specifically saying, you know, being aggressive and getting their own guy are telling, given his past with the draft. You know, they traded last year to move up into the first round. A second time with Portland, they were like always trading in the draft when it was him and Buchanan over there. So I do believe that if they have a guy they like, regardless if it's behind or above where they are, you know, they won't necessarily stay there. And he even said that. He said, where you are now is not always where you're going to be on draft night. And so I don't know if the Pacers will actually pick six, but that is pick six. That's a football term. Man, I got to work in some puns there. That is where I think that they'll shape their legacies. Do they love someone at six and take them, or do they really go get their guy, whatever trade direction that happens to be?
And this is me. I know we talked about this before we started the podcast, but kind of going all over the place tonight. I was very irritated to see, because I like Sabonis. I think a lot of Pacers love Sabonis. That hurt a little bit to see a smile from Sabonis and the Kings end up in the top four. That stung just a tad. But yeah, I mean, you're right. And if there's one thing that should give Pacers fans a little bit of hope, I know there's probably fair criticism to the way the Pacers have drafted underneath the Kevin Pritchard regime itself. However, one thing he's very good at, should he decide to go that route, is orchestrating trades. We've seen it a number of different times. The most famous and notable one is the return they got back for Paul George a couple years ago. Now, I understand both those guys are gone in terms of Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, but that in turn turned out for Buddy Hield and Tyrese Halliburton. And Tyrese Halliburton, viewed by many as the steal of trade season last year, and a cornerstone for this Pacers franchise likely moving forward. So do I trust him in a draft room? I'm always going to trust the president and the general manager staff to do the right thing, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to question it. Do I trust him more, though, in trade acquisitions? Absolutely, because that's one area where he has a proven track record to be able to get great value regardless of what he's moving.
Yeah, the Pacers colored glasses guy would say something like, well, when he picks high, it goes well, right? Greg Oden got hurt. You can kick him for that one. But like Brandon Roy was good. LaMarcus Aldridge was good. Duarte was good. Like his higher picks look much better than his post-lottery picks. And he is a brilliant trader. That has been his hallmark of keeping the Pacers afloat so far. So whatever term of aggression he decides to do, or this front office determines, because I think they love someone in this draft. I don't know who it is, but I think based on the way he's talking, they love maybe a guy or two, and they would really like to get them. And I think that will kind of drive their decisions in terms of movement. And what makes this draft fascinating, and what makes ending at six fascinating, is kind of demarcation tiers. My big board, which means nothing because I don't work for the Pacers, and I'm not a talent evaluator, and I don't make a big board, so it doesn't matter.
I value your hypothetical big board.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I do watch these guys. Like, I don't think my opinion is useless, but like, no, whatever. Look, Chet and Powell are my 1-2, and then Jabari's a firm 3, and then Ivy's his own 4. And then after that, you know, Sharp and Keegan Murray and A.J. Griffin and Ben Mather, and those guys are kind of all together. And that's kind of the weird part about sixes. Those guys are all kind of good, but they're below the tier where I think they're like substantial franchise difference makers. And that's the most painful part about sixes. This draft is like that. The framework of this draft is what makes not moving up the most painful part, I think, for people who live in the city and watch this team.
If Johnny Davis Benedict Mathurin is my line. I don't really like, if the options you gave me are Mathurin and up. So let's say Smith, Holmgren, Banchero, Ivy, Murray, Mathurin, and Davis. I stop it at Mathurin. That's my area where, okay, if you're going to stay at six, draft there. That's throwing out the idea of them trading up, right? I'm not to say they couldn't, but that's throwing that off the table. Because like you said, he has said post-draft lottery that they're going to be aggressive. Which way is that going to be? That's the question that we have right now, right? Is it going to be to go up or is it going to be to go back? In my scenario, I'm saying you're going back if it's anything worse than Mathurin. That I don't know. Davis at times as, and maybe he wouldn't be asked to do this right away. He definitely wouldn't be asked to do this right away. As the focal point of the offense, there were times where he struggled last year with Wisconsin. Whether or not you want to blame it on the ankle injury and you want to say he lost explosiveness, that's fair. I'm not saying he's going to be a bad pro, but if the haul is right, that's my line of where I'd like to trade back if I'm Kevin Pritchard and company.
Hey guys, one short little break here to talk about the good folks over at Athletic Greens, our next partner, a product I've been using every single morning. AG1, I started taking it to help me in the morning with better gut health, have more energy, and a more optimized immune system. So what is this stuff? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start the day off right. It's easy. I just mix it in my water, swirl it all up, and then drink it. It's a delicious. It has like a nice tropical taste. So it's actually pretty tasty, and it's healthy too. It's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals. It's perfect for everybody, and it costs less than $3 a day. They have over 7,000 five-star reviews and have been recommended by tons of professional athletes. Right now, time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a bunch of different pills and supplements. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens will give you a free 1 year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NBA Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Yeah, everybody's got a line somewhere. If one of... So, like, here's the thing about six for me. If one of Banchero, Holmgren, Smith, Ivy, Shaden, if one... I don't know about Shaden, actually. But if one of the four guys is there, you pick, for sure. And then in the next kind of swath, I'm kind of like, you know, if you can... I for me, it'd probably be Griffin, Mathurin, Murray, and Sharp. If multiple of those guys are available, I'd be willing to move back two spots and just get the last one of those guys. That's how I think I view this draft right now. But I'm not the Pacers, and I think their situation's interesting, and I'm curious about your take on this now that they're set at six. You know, I'm just going to use names of Sharp and Murray, but you can insert other player prototypes into this. You know, with Shaden, you have a guy who is really unknown, and his floor is super low, but he could be awesome. He could be amazing. Could be a franchise-changing guy. And then with Keegan, his floor is much higher, like probably a safe pick, probably going to be at least a starter-level guy at some point, but the ceiling isn't quite as high, maybe not much higher than like a third option and a pretty good defender. You know, if you're the Pacers and you have Haliburton in the fold, but you just won 25 games, third worst season in franchise history, you know, how do you view this draft? Do you feel like they should be kind of swinging for the fences, going for the high ceiling guy, seeing what they have because they already have a guy like Haliburton? Or do you feel like because they just were 25 wins really bad, they just need to get talent in who they know or they feel pretty good about is going to be pretty good? Because that might kind of shape how they operate in this top 10, 8, whatever they decide their range is.
It's a great question, and that's going to be the question of the offseason, right? Is how do you build the future of this franchise? Because we talked about it, you know, when I've been in the host chair on 107.5 The Fan and I've had you on, we've talked about it a lot the last couple weeks, is this is a turning point. Feels so aggressive, and I'm not trying to be like hot takey with this, but it really is in terms of what the next 3 to 4 seasons look like for your Indiana Pacers. Because I was talking about this today. If you look at, let's just say, Luka Doncic and Paul George. I was producing on the Dan Dawkins Show today on 107.5 The Fan, and we talked about those names in particular. Just Paul George, because he was the last great, great Pacer. No disrespect to Oladipo, or maybe so, depending on what side of the Pacers fan base you are. But both those guys did make the playoffs their rookie year, but their ascension to real stardom didn't happen until year 3 or year 4. Luka, I guess, was always viewed as a freak, but you know what I mean? In terms of making a deep run to stardom in the playoffs, it didn't happen until year 3 or year 4. The larger point being, it's going to take 2 to 3 years at minimum, in theory, at least with this draft, the way I look at it, for them to be the next all-star for the Pacers. So I think you need to do whatever it takes to mold that guy. And for me, I would swing for the fences. I would. I want to find a high upside guy that has the ability to be groomed into something, that is not going to be asked, hey, we need 40 from you right off the bat. We need you to be a walking triple-double right off the bat. So I do want a player that can develop, Tony, but if you're asking me where I want to take my chances, or do I want to take a chance, yes, I want to take a swing on somebody, but I want them to be able to pair well with Halliburton, if that makes sense. I think you and I are both in agreement. Everybody is probably up for trade talks on this roster, except Halliburton. I don't think he's going anywhere.
I would probably not trade Duarte myself, but I would understand for the point. Right, yep. Yeah, yeah. Thing to do that. Okay, so I am going to be the lame journalist who has no answer, but you know, I think I err on the side of safety ever so slightly, but I could definitely be talked out of it. And my main reason is because I'm really high on Tyrese Halliburton. I think he is kind of the all-star level guy, and they'll not next year, but the year after that, after they can spend while he's still on his rookie deal, they could be pretty good if he develops the way I think he can. Part of why I'm so high on him, besides that he's really damn good, is that he got a lot better already, and the 2020 draft class is going to be a really fascinating case study of growth, because think about that draft. They got drafted in November of 2020. Like, those guys have been in the NBA for like 16 months. You know, well, I don't know how time works. It's a little longer than that, but not very long, right? Like,
a whole pandemic worth of time passed between the
drafts. Yeah. So Jalen Smith's in the same boat. Like, look how much he grew all of a sudden, because you know, with the Suns, they traded him like 12 months into his career, effectively, even though it was his second season. Like, it's all very different for that draft class. And like, the Pacers probably can't keep Jalen Smith for a million cap reasons. But you know, with Halliburton, like, when most guys would be entering year three, like, he'll have a lot more time under his belt. Like, I think he will really explode next year. And that's a really stupid reason to think that. But just the nature of that draft class, where they couldn't do as much, you know, skill development and workouts going into it, and they got drafted into a weird situation, then right away they're in camp, and like, it's all crazy. You know, those guys are going to develop a little different, and still have to see Halliburton grow the way he has. And I'm really high on him because he's good now. All that to say, I think he's the dude for them, not who they draft in this class, despite him being picked a higher number pick than who they're going to pick. So I would err ever so slightly on the safer prospect. For those watching on YouTube can see me putting up air quotes, just because I think when Halliburton is that dude, if you have, you know, Duarte, I think looks like he's at least going to be a starter level player. And then if you get another one for sure, all in rookie deals at the same time, you'll have money to spend around him. That is like almost a guarantee to be a pretty damn good team. And so is that, you know, the level that fans want of like title level? Maybe not without proper moves around it, but I think it's more likely to be able to get there than the swing for the fences, even though the swing could be the thing that actually does take them into a title level team.
Here's my, I guess, slight counter to that, and this feels idiotic me saying it, but I'm feeling havocy tonight, Tony. So I'm
that's
rolling.
Right. You have to after a night like that.
Why I want the swing for the fence option, and this is going to irk some Pacers fans, and I understand. But you said this last week when I interviewed you in terms of, is this a team that makes the playoffs next year? If you take a swing on somebody and it goes cataclysmically bad this year, not to say the guy's career is over. Like, I'm not saying like he gets played out of the league. I just mean insane struggles with whoever you take a chance on. You're right back here next year. And I know nobody wants that. I know no one wants to have to deal with another entire season of struggling to find 30 wins on the schedule and going night by night thinking, man, I wish that we had some star player that is fun to watch every night. I think they're still going to be fun. And I agree with you. I think Halliburton is going to be that main fun piece. But for me, the reason I'm okay with taking the risk is I don't think there's a high-level hot seat on Kevin Pritchard right now. I think that the Pacers are committed to letting him take one more swing. And I'm talking by swing, I mean 3 to 5 years of kind of measuring this thing up, getting progression year over year. I don't think they're as bad as they were a year ago, regardless who they draft, because I just don't think the Simons will allow it to happen. But I could easily see them being just a fringe playoff team and still being in the lottery. That might happen even if you go your safe route, but take a swing on a guy, I don't know. I want them to be trust the process, Tony. Damn it, trust the process.
See, I think the strongest argument in favor of the high ceiling player is like, they're better than most 25 win teams last year. Like, they were in so many close games. But I think the strongest argument in favor of it is the 10th seed, not the 8th seed to get in the playoffs. The 10th seed in the East last year won 43 games. Like, jumping 18 wins is a lot of wins in 1 year. So if you go unsafe and it doesn't work, you're probably still going to have a bottom, whatever, 6-7 record in the league. And then you have another chance to do the same discussion of unsafe versus safe next year. But like, that's swing, the strongest the point to me is like, even if they want to be good next year, they're not close enough without a ton of changes or an aggressive move up to really do that. So that I think is the strongest argument against what I said earlier about, you know, going safe and building around Halliburton. But you know, I understand both sides, and that's what makes me boring for a show like this, where I have to be like, oh, this side is better, they should do this. But it, you know, the way this draft is structured, the fact that they didn't land in the top four means they have to have these sort of thoughts of what makes more sense for us.
Can you run me through one more time, just naming two prospects off the top, if they stay at six, who you feel will be a swing and who you feel will be safe if they're staying at six?
Well, Shaedon Sharpe is a swing because no one knows anything about him, right? Like, he could be amazing because, like, even at the G League camp that they've got going on, and now the draft combine started, I'm sure he's there too. Like, his athleticism looks crazy. Even if it's just one-on-one gym workouts, you can see athleticism, even though those mean nothing to me in terms of, like, how good you are as a player.
Right.
You can see athleticism. He's been reported to have insane vert. The IBL stuff I watched from an AAU, like, yeah, that dude's an athletic freak. Like, he just skates by dudes. So maybe he's awesome. But also, he hasn't played against dudes his age in over a year, and you just never know, right? The floor could be nothing. He could just be not a good NBA player. He could be a horrible defender. And then, you know, I think AJ Griffin's kind of a high-ceiling, low-floor guy because his defense isn't very good, but he could be, like, the best shooter in this draft and has a really nice, varied offensive repertoire. And Keegan's the safe guy, to me, who has a really kind of complete game, to steal a phrase that will be used on the Keegan Murray preview podcast coming later this week for everybody who wants to hear more about Keegan Murray. He's a very complete and safer player because he doesn't have as many holes, but he's not a good ISO scorer necessarily. His defense is fine, but not like amazing. You know, he doesn't project to be like a game changer, like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to win you a playoff series level player, but he's definitely going to be, to me, like a starter level guy because there's so few holes in his game. So that's where I kind of view the ceiling floor debate going, is those sort of names. And Mathurin's in the middle, so that's who they'll
pick. Yeah, and I guess that's maybe why I kind of lean Mathurin, even though I said I was on the side of of swinging for the fences, because I don't know, I feel like that you present the two safe option, I present the swing for the fences option. I think Mathurin could potentially be in the middle. I understand that he's not the best in terms of, you know, a lot of critiques that I see on these early scouting reports on him, or he could be a little bit more effective off the dribble, and he needs to work on, should he be asked to be isolation guy, he needs to work on that a little bit. But I also don't think he would be asked to be isolation guy a ton with Halliburton running the controls. Yeah. And I think he could be a fun piece to easily insert into this lineup. However, I don't know why I'm going this way. There's a Family Guy episode where they always talk about the mystery box. Sharp's the mystery box. He could be anything. Right. He could be a boat, Tony.
That's right. Why, Family Guy reference.
Look at the fences and try it out. Come on now.
I know. I will just never have as much I can get a lot of information from college games on a lot of these guys. Like, I'll just never have as much information as NBA teams on him. So it's going to be really hard to even, like, grade the pick of the team who picks him. One more break here, guys, to talk about two wonderful groups of people. First up, the good folks over at Built Bar, who have a new birthday cake puffs flavor that is absolutely delicious. What is Built Bar? They make the best tasting protein bars out there. They're 100% covered in chocolate, soft and easy to chew protein bars that are delicious, great for the health conscious guy, and come in a ton of amazing flavors. I love the peanut butter brownie flavor, and this new birthday cake puffs one is delicious. I've had one almost every day since I got them, and you've got to try them yourself. They're really healthy, and what separates them from other protein bars in the store is they're actually delicious. They basically taste like a candy bar. This new birthday cake puffs one has 150 calories and 16 grams of protein, for example. You can see the macros for all their flavors directly on their website, and again, they're all 100% covered in real chocolates. You got to try them. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 when you're checking out, and you'll get 15% off your order of Built Bars, whatever flavor you get. The mixed package, a specific flavor, they've got it all there. That promo code again is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Let's also really quick talk about the good folks over at Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models for vehicles, it's impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. You got to go in there, endure the really annoying questioning from the guy who says, it's not in the store, we don't have it, and then they order it because they have to order something for the specs of your specific vehicle, and then they don't have it in the store, so you got to go back and get it. It's all really annoying. Instead, you have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home or in your pocket on your phone, which allow you to save time and money. You can save 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts By doing so, and they're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over two decades. Their prices are always reliably low for every customer, and they have everything you could need. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, new carpet, you need it, they got it. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. The history of the sixth pick is all over the place, Jimmy. That is what's going to be the fun thing to look back. Like, Damian Lillard, really nice. Marcus Smart, defensive player of the year. Buddy Hield, the current Pacer, kind of varied career. Jonathan Isaac, I love, but hasn't looked good. And then there's also guys like Jarrett Culver and the $100 million man, according to Larry Bird. Willie Cauley-Stein, not super great. You know, New Orleans Noel did not turn out great. Jan Vesely for my Wizards, oof. On that pick. Let's go back in time. 2006, Brandon Roy was the number six pick. Two, the Portland Trailblazers with Kevin Pritchard at the helm. That's a crazy draft looking back in retrospect. Pritchard traded away so much stuff in that draft. They had the seventh pick, and then they traded Randy Foy and other stuff to get Brandon Roy, and then they traded a bunch of other stuff like Sebastian Telfair and Theo Ratliff to move up to number two to get LaMarcus Aldridge. And when KP says being aggressive, you know, I don't know if it means he'll go get number two and still pick at six or move other ways around. But in his history at this slot or being high up, he has been like this. So it would not surprise me at all if the Pacers did some pretty crazy trade, just given his history and their current situation where moving up seems like it would have a lot of value.
Did you
think you'd hear Sebastian Telfair's name today?
I know I did not. Believe it or not, I made a bingo card just for this evening, and that was not on there for my appearance on Locked On Pacers. I don't know how to say this without just straight up saying it, because I keep getting to my mentions and I family members that are Pacers fans, and you are one of the few people I know that are straight up driving without shame the Chet Holmgren train. And I feel like there's a lot of people that have been burnt by the Tyler Hansbroughs and the Miles Plumleys of the world that see Holmgren and they're like, oh, great. I'm a lengthy, tall, white guy. Here we go. This will be a great time to be a Patriots fan. Why is he different for you? Why is Holmgren a different next evolution in that step of the Pacers finally landing something that might irk some of the fan base?
Trading up for Holmgren would be the Tony East parade day in Indy, just so I could say I'm right. Not even that I necessarily think he's going to be really good. But not even necessarily that I care about watching him here more than anywhere else, but just I think he's so good and no one else does it. It's all defense for me. That's what separates him from most of these prospects. Like his defensive feel, not quite Evan Mobley-esque from last year, but really, you know, like last year's top three would all go number one this year. Last year's top five might all go number one this year, actually. But like Mobley was like one of the best defensive prospects since Anthony Davis, and Chet's close to that. You know, that is why I rate him so highly. I think no matter what team drafts him, like he could almost be day one defensive positive impact guy, which is really hard for rookies. So yes, he's skinny and his offense will take some time to develop. But Evan Mobley turned out to be a pretty dang good passer and finisher as a rookie, because if you're tall and can move pretty well as a big man, turns out it's pretty easy to find ways to score in the NBA. So I think he's going to be very good. And if the Pacers do trade up to two, I think he'd be a wonderful fit for them, because Turner's on an expiring and they don't necessarily have a locked in center right now. You know, Jalen Smith, Isaiah Jackson look nice, but not amazing. Last thing here, you know, we talk about KP's aggression before. Would you be willing to give up a ton to trade up? I mean, they've got like so here's where I went with this. On yesterday's show at the end, I talked about how I think that the best thing that could happen to the Pacers outside of the top four teams being all Western Conference teams is some teams jump up that want to be really good very soon, because then Malcolm Brogdon becomes appealing to that team. And Buddy Hield or Miles Turner or TJ McConnell, whatever vet the Pacers might consider trading, would be more appealing to that team than, you know, the Rockets don't want vets. The Magic don't want vets. The Thunder don't want these vets. But the Kings, who got four, ironic that the Pacers just made a huge trade with these teams. They just traded for Sabonis. They have this edict on their new coach, playoffs, make the playoffs. They might be the one team did jump up that would want vets or want to get better in theory. So if you're the Pacers looking to trade up, how aggressive would you be willing to be with things like the Cavs pick they have in the future, 31, they've got all these vets, they've got Goga, they've got Isaiah Jackson, they've got a ton of appealing young stuff to potentially move. How aggressive would you be willing to be to get into the top four?
Can you remind me, because once the the pick did not correlate to this year. It's been lost on me. There's so much else going on. Where's that Cavs pick at right now in theory? I know we had to let the season play out, but
there is currently at a 2023 Cleveland first, lottery protected, and then it turns into 2 seconds if the Cavs miss the playoffs again next year.
Well, so you're not trading in division, so you're, and you're not moving up one spot, I don't think. So you're not doing anything with Detroit, to answer your question. No. And I completely agree with everything you said about the teams in the top three in Orlando and Oklahoma City and Houston. No one's trying to win right away there. Tony, I don't think this draft is the worst draft that I've been hardcore following. Like, I shouldn't say that, but that, when I've been in the business world of this, right, instead of being a child or being, you know, a college student or whatever the case may be, and no disrespect to those people, because I feel like sports should be engaged by everybody, regardless of if you're doing this for a career or you're just a hardcore fan. But I reference it because the Oladipo draft was probably, in terms of, like, top five pick hype, the worst draft that I've ever been a part of or ever been involved in. I don't think this is that, but, like, outside of the top three, I still have question marks with Ivy. Everybody wants to make him into Ja Morant and wants to do those player comparisons. And I just don't know. Like, there's been times where this probably isn't fair, but he looked disinterested during the NCAA tournament. Now, you got a lot of things going on. He's a kid. Like, I'm not, like, knocking him and saying he's gonna have a bad career, but, like, this isn't a Zion Williamson. That's a terrible example because Zion hasn't played. But you know what I mean? This isn't like a top.
No, it is not. It is not a Zion Williamson. That's correct.
There's not
one of the best prospects in the last decade.
There's not one there. Like, I guess Jabari Smith, right? Like, everybody seems to think consensusly he's top two. But Oklahoma City and Orlando aren't trading for you unless you're giving up treasure chest of long-term assets. I don't mean what you said, which is players that are veterans. I mean, you're probably looking at your pick this year, that Cavs pick, and then I would assume it's another first rounder, Tony.
Yeah, like, I agree.
And so, no,
the
so
gap
no,
is that
not, that's not worth
the
it.
Gap is, the gap is big enough to me between top four and even six that it's either the Cavs pick, the Pacers pick, and another first, or Cavs pick, Pacers pick, and like Duarte. Like, I think it's that big of a gap.
And I just don't, like, we've all done, if you're a massive NBA fan at some point in time, you've played 2K, or whatever basketball game you played. You played a game where you were the GM. And if you're playing with a big market team, yeah, we'll give all the picks. I don't care. 7 first rounders. Big LeBron here. Let's go. It'll be a great time. If you're running a small market team and you're being careful, you're not giving away multiple assets to go take a chance in a draft where there's not a clear home run. I'm all about trusting your scouts, but unless somebody in Pritchard's wing says Paolo Banchero is going to be the next Giannis, he's going to be just an absolute star in this league, I truly believe that, we need to move up to three, that's the only way I'm giving up future draft capital to make a move. And to four, if the Kings are willing to go ahead and, God forbid, let's say the Kings are like, the Pacers weren't doing that Miles Turner thing, right? We need to get that guy here. Like, if the Kings were like, yeah, we want to team up Sabonis and Turner, sure, or Brogdon, whoever, that's fine. I'll move up 2 spots with the Kings to go maybe get Banchero or go get Ivy, or I guess Holmgren for you to keep the Tony East parade going across the across.
Oh God. I have Paolo 1. I just also really like Chet.
Sure. but that's the only scenario for me. If you're going to 4, then you're probably swapping 4 and 6, and you're giving up a veteran or two. If Sacramento wants to do that, great. Otherwise, there's not enough clear-cut evidence to warrant trading massive draft capital if you're the Pacers in the state of the franchise right now, because they're not a piece away. They're not one of these guys away from instantly being back in contention. This is not. And I don't even mean contention. To be in the playoffs. Like, you're not there. You cannot afford to give draft capital for an uncertain draft like this.
They better be damn sure.
I'm team trade back. I've officially decided.
Wow.
I'm team trade back. Bring more capital. Bring more assets.
I didn't ask you to do this, but you just unintentionally, perfect segue, because tomorrow's show will be all about trades, baby. Up, down, left, right. I don't know how that would work, but I will do all of the trade talk. The Kings fortunately make trade up make some sense, and Miles Turner's young enough. It's not impossible. So trade up talk, trade back talk, also trade out talk. That I don't think they should do that, but it's something to talk about. We'll do all that tomorrow on Locked On Pacers because they have lots of options now that they know their spot. Now that the order is set, it's all more clear, and the draft combine is going. So now every exec in the league is going to be up till 3 a.m. talking with other execs and prospects to get all this stuff going off the ground. You won't want to miss it tomorrow. Jimmy, thank you very much for the time. Where can people follow you, all your work, and all your great stuff that you do in the indie community and for Summer League?
Yeah, you can give me a follow on Twitter at TheJCook. That's at THEJCOOK. As Tony mentioned, on 107.5 The Fan, I produce the Dan Dockett Show weekdays 12 to 3. I give out some bad bets every now and again, so you can check those out on Twitter as well. And then as Tony mentioned, heavily involved with the NBA Summer League, wide variety of different spots. Occasionally we're on ESPN Family Networks with that, otherwise just with NBA Radio. So Tony's right. Vegas is a great time. Keep following me on Twitter at TheJCook, and hopefully it's another exciting summer league for the Pacers with whoever the heck they're going to draft at 6 out there shining in Sin City.
The best part of your plays of the day graphic is on days when you get none of them right, and it's a sad picture of your head in your hands. It's so good. You got to check that all out. I'm on Twitter at TEastNBA. I'll be babbling about this lottery all day tomorrow, so look forward to that. And at Locked On Pacers for this account, where you can find all this podcast stuff and the easiest way to reach me directly. Thank you guys a ton for listening. Again, talking trades tomorrow, and Keegan Murray, I'll just spoil it now, on Friday's show. Thank you guys a ton, and we will see you then.